In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. I am James.
I am Mike.
And this is actually our first podcast.
First episode.
Oh, yes. Very excitement. So we are doing this here today. First, I think to start, if you looked it up, the Xenial Chronicles, and found it, hopefully you're a Xenial looking for something to kind of talk about this new micro generation, or you're one of our friends or family who we've bugged and coerced to check this out.
Hi, guys.
Yes. Hi, everybody. Hi, everybody. It's fantastic. We kind of want to give a first little explanation about what really is a Xenial. Now, I originally brought this to Mike. Remember when I brought it to you, sir?
Yeah.
And you had no idea really what a Xenial was. You really hadn't heard about it yet.
Well, sort of. I mean, I've heard the term get thrown around, but I never really kind of, I don't know. I've always kind of sort of put it together, but it wasn't really like something that was, I don't know. Mainstream. It was kind of always in the back of my head. I didn't really get it. You know?
Yeah, it wasn't really mainstream. It wasn't really, it was kind of a thought thrown around.
Right.
Well, doing some research. This was, it's thought that this term was created in September of 2014.
Okay.
In an article in Good Magazine, written by Sarah Stankorb and Jed Olabom. I hope I'm saying their names right.
I don't know who either of those people
are. Neither do I. I'm sure if we read more magazines, we were more cultured, we would know some writers like that. But
probably.
We are not cultured in that way.
Nope.
But that's where it's thought that the term kind of came from. And Xenial is a term, and though it's spelled with an X, it is pronounced Xenial. It is a term that is now used. It's a portmanteau. Do I have to go over the portmanteau definition for you, sir?
What the hell did you just call me?
Well, a portmanteau is when you take two words and combine them together to create another word to describe. Kind of the
Oh,
two
I do that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Portmanteaus are fairly regularly used. It's blending the words or the terms Generation X and Millennial,
right?
And that's where you get the Xenial, because this is a newly kind of, I wouldn't say discovered, but a newly understood micro generation that happens between the Gen Xers and the Millennials.
Right.
The date range can be fuzzy, but for the most part, it's agreed from people born between 1977. And 1983 fall in this Xenial grouping. Now, normally this would just be a cusping between generations.
Okay.
But because of some specific things that happened to the people born in this time frame, instead of it just being the cusp between Gen X and Millennial, it has actually created its own microgeneration. This is a regular thing that happens when you have what is termed generational fuzziness. It's this concept that between the two generation rifts, you get this fuzziness in generations, and sometimes a microgeneration presents itself based upon the shared experiences of the people born in that year grouping. There's very
so you're
specific
talking
things.
Like the generational fuzziness as far as like the experience of everybody that was born like right on the cusp.
Yes, right.
What are you talking about?
Right on the cusp between like when you have your astrological signs, your horoscope stuff.
Yeah.
There's people who are like, I'm Gemini cusping Cancer, which is whatever hogwash you want it to be, but this is the same type of thing. These people in this year group are cusping between the Generation X and the Millennials.
Right.
They share different traits with Gen Xers. They share different traits with Millennials.
Okay.
And yet at the same time, they feel like they don't truly belong to either group. There's something that's
some
not
people that are like
same.
Super disconnected to either one of them.
Yeah. They see like some millennial things like, avocado toast or texting without calling people.
I know
all
a lot
time.
Of millennials that just don't dig on avocado toast.
True,
either.
There are, but I'm just saying those are these concepts that will be thrown out. But,
right.
But they also see some of the connectedness to some of the ideology of hope and of kind of a different outlook, an accepting outlook on life that millennials seem to have more of than Gen Xers. Gen Xers are very much defined by their kind of almost hopeless feeling of life, their dejection of life, their kind of
cynicism.
Super, good.
Super cynical.
Yes. And you see less of that in the millennials. More importantly, you see a lot of more acceptance in the millennials of different lifestyles, different ways of looking at the world.
Okay.
The people that are being defining this new microgeneration of Xennial kind of have both of these traits. They have that cynicism, but they also have a little bit of the optimism.
Okay.
They have some of the closed-mindedness and set in their ways that the Gen Xer still had, but also have some of the ways of looking at the world that it's, you know, more accepting, more understanding, okay. more involved in like LGBTQ stuff, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And that's where this little microgeneration makes a difference in things. It really is its own separate group. And as I kind of came up with the thought of talking about this, I talked to many different people that I knew that were part of this microgeneration, and most of them have been able to say back to me, yeah, I do feel not really connected. I've been kind of called a Gen Xer. I've been kind of called, in your instance, you're more on the millennial side.
I am very much.
82, right?
I was born in 82, yeah.
And so you feel more on the millennial side of things. Part of it will have to do with your growing up and the things that happen. For instance,
right.
you did have younger siblings. That helps play into it.
That makes sense.
Your younger siblings would be millennials, so you got a little more dose of that than, say, somebody who didn't. You get some people that are within this age group, and like I was born in 1980. You get some that have siblings that are older, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They will identify more with the Gen X crowd.
That makes sense.
Specifically because they had Gen X brothers and sisters and whatever. They got some of that influence.
Because you are the younger of you, you're kind of in the middle.
I'm the really, really weird one that I have a brother that's 10 years older than me, so he's hardcore Gen X.
Right.
I have a sister that's 10 years younger than me, so she's hardcore millennial. I am dead in the middle, and I'm in 1980, so I'm in the middle of
you
this.
You got brothers and sisters that are 20 years apart?
Yes, sir, I do.
Huh.
Yeah. Two different marriages for my father.
I mean, I know that I've met your, I've never met your older brother.
No,
but I've met
two
your
older brothers. I have two of them.
You have two older brothers.
I have two older brothers. One,
I've never met your older siblings. I definitely met your younger siblings. I met them back when I first met you.
The only time you would have seen one of my older siblings was at mine and Sarah's wedding.
At your wedding? Okay.
Yeah, my oldest sibling John was at the wedding. But you
if
were,
I rem- I don't
you were doing the guest
I definitely
book.
Do, okay, you were I doing the guest book, well, then so I you, probably met him, but
you met
it's
him,
been
but
quite
remember.
Some time.
Yeah, that's like 17, 18 years now.
Yeah, it's been
17
a bit.
And a half.
Been a bit.
So, yeah, it's been a while. But, yeah, it's the only time you would have met them. And the other brother, Joe, he's younger than the oldest.
Right.
He lives in Ohio. And so I don't even get to see him that much. Great guy,
okay.
But I don't get to see him that much. So you wouldn't have met him. But, right. Yeah, you met my two younger sisters. And that does put me in a weird predicament because I'm even more torn between Gen X and millennial. I have so many different traits of both because I had both of those as siblings, and
right.
I had a parent who was parenting kids during Gen X and during the millennial times, and then during this Xennial thing, which didn't really exist until again 2004 that they really started to identify that this little group of people has a
2004 or 2014.
Sorry, 2014.
Gotcha.
2014. Be clear. That this group of people has a just different outlook on the world because of their time frame that they were born in.
So
and that's the real thing about the generational differences,
right.
Is it really has to do with your outlook on the world and what you experienced during your childhood, your formative years,
right.
That helped form that outlook on the world.
So what's if that's the case, like what's the general similarity of the Xennial generation in general, or the micro generation, I guess is what it's called, right?
You know, I mentioned this kind of slightly to you earlier.
Yeah.
But this was something I read in one of the various things I was reading about this. You can say that the Xennial generation went through during their childhood and their formative years,
mm-hmm.
an analog to digital childhood.
I could see that.
And we,
that makes a lot of sense.
And we really experienced that because as we were kids, we can use various things. We can use the way we ingested various types of media.
Right.
For instance, music. We went from, when I was a kid, possibly when you were still a kid, they still had the 8-track players and record players. Some of the parents did.
I wasn't
cassette
really
tapes.
Big into 8-track cassettes were one thing. Cassette tapes for sure.
Yeah.
Vinyl was still out on the market.
Yeah.
But like when I was born, that's when CDs like first got introduced. I remember
CDs didn't come until the late 80s, mid to late 80s. And most people didn't have the CD players.
Okay, so you're talking like millennials have seen CDs practically their whole lives. I remember being in the store when I was like 5 or 6.
Okay.
And that would have made sense. It's about
87. 88.
Okay, yeah, see, I was 5.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the store, and I remember that my aunt was looking for a car stereo way back, and they had just started putting out car stereos with CD players because CDs had just been kind of the hot thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they like they demonstrated at at like Circuit City or wherever the hell they were. Like they demonstrated the Bad album on CD, like with the car stereo, and like the quality was nuts. Mm-hmm. And like I remember all that. But yeah, that's okay. So, but that's true. Is that like I grew up a Michael Jackson fan, so Thriller was like. Thriller was like played on vinyl all the time.
No shame in that, sir. Michael was amazing, still is to this day.
Yeah, of course not. Thriller was played on vinyl all the time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because that tended to be, that was very, very central to me as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, I got, you know, there's little home movies of me like moonwalking when I'm like two,
nice.
Two and a half.
I need to see those. I will
They're
find,
awesome.
I will find your mom to get those. I want to see those.
Cool.
But see, that's what I'm talking about. If you look at the Gen Xers, they were in their teen years going into adulthood.
Yeah.
When you had the shift over from cassette to CD. We saw, because I remember my parents' cars having 8-track players in it. I remember having my own 8-track tapes because we had an 8-track player in the house. The records. Then the cassettes came in. Then the CDs came in. And just as we were getting into adulthood, there came the talk of the digital platforms for music.
Oh, dude.
And that's the thing is, we saw so many shifts in such a small amount of time. I'm not saying that other generations haven't seen these shifts. The Gen Xers, yes, they all saw these shifts during their lifetime. The baby boomers saw these shifts during their lifetime, but it was through their whole lifetime, not through their childhood.
Right.
Not from when they were born to where they became an adult. And that's where the biggest key is. We saw all of these various things changing while we were still kids. We saw us go from having to attempt to figure out how to use VCRs.
Right.
Into VHS tape being everything and VCRs everything. Blockbuster became a thing, and that's where our connection is.
Video rental.
We met through Blockbuster. The video rental store became the thing during our generation, during this time frame. Uh-oh, Mike forgot to turn off his phone.
Ah, damn it.
Oh, he's in so much trouble.
I just busted this thing out to mute it, and it freaked out on me.
This is staying in here. I'm not going to let him edit this out
because
I want this to be in here. He forgot. Yes, I was right at camera, sir.
Damn it.
So if we're gonna have any like blips that come off of this and any you know stuff that we
see. You'll get to see my reaction on camera.
This is it. It will be there. It will be there. I promise you. Anyway, to point. The video rental stores became a thing for our this is why we're so connected to these things.
Right.
Is because it made the VHS access of movies. VHS access of movies for the Gen Xers, it didn't happen until, again, they were in their teens and adult, not in the same way that we were able to get them.
What were they all on, like Betamax and shit, or what?
Not really. Betamax only lasted, it tried to compete with VHS, but it didn't really work. No, they saw a movie in the theater, and then they had to wait for it to come out on a network somewhere, on a channel somewhere. They very rarely got to guess.
I mean, they used to have like...
No.
Well, VHS was out in like the 70s, wasn't it?
To some extent, but not to the extent that everybody had one in their damn house and you could rent movies easily.
Oh, yeah, dude. VCRs changed the game back in the day. Became, you could record TV and stuff. Yes.
Well, if your dad could figure out how to work the VCR while your mom was yelling at him that she needed to finish so he could come and have dinner.
Back in the day, my dad actually tried to make money doing a lot of different types of stuff. He was into construction. He was always very entrepreneurial, and one of the things he tried to do was once he discovered that he could set up a VCR to record the Nintendo, like the NES, he would take the NES and hook it up to the VCR and play it and basically try to speed run Super Mario Brothers and then record it on VHS to like see if he could make money showing people how to speed run Mario Brothers.
This is like in 86, 87?
Yeah. This is like year or two after we got it.
Okay. So to make that understandable to our millennials and in the meme culture, he was in 87 living like he was in 2017.
Totally.
That's crazy. That's forethought,
right?
Because I mean, how much of that is on the internet nowadays?
I know, exactly. But, I mean, they used to do like the manufactured like Nintendo tip videos with the magazines and stuff, but they didn't like you. Now you can go on YouTube and see people speed running all these games.
Yeah, they
all
can
over
show you how to do all the secrets and everything. But that's the thing is, video games is a very good example. Millennials don't live; they don't understand a world where there's not video games. Whereas for
Gen
our generation,
were kind of introduced into it.
They were as adults.
Yeah.
Late teens and into their adults, but they, I mean, because they did have video games prior to the NES, but I mean, considerably, the NES.
Well, I mean, you had like a lot of stuff that happened back in like the '70s. Atari was responsible for like the video game crash.
Yeah.
And Nintendo coming through is, I know a little bit about that. Nintendo coming through and actually being marketed as the reason why the NES looks like, they call it the toaster NES.
Yeah.
The reason why it front loads is because it looks like a VCR.
Yeah.
They did that on purpose so that it didn't look like a game system like the Atari that was top-loaded and all
that. And that's why it was called a Nintendo Entertainment System as opposed
to a
video game system.
Exactly.
But, Will, I promise you, sir.
Don't worry. We'll tangent off on that on another episode, I'm sure.
With your video game lore, I will make sure we bring out the history
of
video
games. I'll pull that out. I'll be in charge of the conversation at that point.
That will be one of yours.
but anyways, please continue.
The thing I like to use the best, the one technology thing I like to use most for having this discussion is the telephone. Because we really saw an amazing revolution in the telephone within our lifetimes. And that, I think, is the real key. First of all, it's created a societal a societal thing. And I'll get to that as I finish the description of our telephones. But when we were young, we had the basic starting phone was kind of that, just for the cameras, brick phone, just this giant phone. The handle, the handset rested on top of it.
Oh, yeah.
And you had either
the desktop giant rotary.
Yeah. Kind of a square. It was either rotary or it had the actual keypad.
The keypads were like a big deal though at the time. The rotary stuff was different.
But it was just it was a square block that just had the handset on it and a cord attached.
Right.
So you were stationary when you were taking the phone call.
Right.
And this was kind of roughly the standard. I mean, there were some differences. There was the whole talking to the one mouthpiece, have the earpiece that you picked up from way long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, that kind of sit there, big phone, had been for a long time.
Sorry, my mind's going with how much actually happened to the phone in the time that we got to see it.
Let's go with the journey on it.
Okay.
And that's the thing is, we have that big brick phone.
All right.
And then they start getting a little smaller to the point where you suddenly have a phone that's on the wall.
Yep.
Usually like in your kitchen or something. It's sitting there on the wall.
Yep.
And in fact, houses started being made with the phone jack right there on the wall so you could just attach the phone in right on top of it.
Yeah.
Then the next, but it's still corded. So it's still got that cord connected.
You got the corded phone on the wall. You had the corded phone that had to sit on the counter, and then the corded phone on the wall where they had the wall jack where it would hang directly on the wall jack and hide the cable and all that kind of stuff. And those, I remember those wall phones in the kitchen at my dad's house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had a wall phone that had a cord that was like 30 feet.
Yeah, so you get the super long cord so that you could walk through various areas of the house and be able to move around without having the cord.
So you could trip your children.
Yes, trip people, trip yourself, right? Get yourself all wrapped up in it. And then there was this, the thing about it, the phone was still there that every time it rang, you had to answer it because there was no caller ID. There was no way to know who was getting a hold of you. You know, you don't know if it was an important family member, bill collector, whatever.
Right.
Somebody was trying to call you, you kind of had to answer the phone. Next revolution that comes forth during our lifetime, answering machine. And this is a big deal.
Dude, yeah.
You got the answering machine at first with the little microcassette tapes that you had to get.
Oh, the little microcassettes. And I remember those.
So at first, the answering machines came out all by themselves. They were a separate unit.
They were just like an internal
piece. It was just a little box, and you had to plug another wire into it. You had to plug like the piggyback, the phone cord into it to be able to get it to work.
Yeah.
Then they started having the phones with the actual answering machine attached into it. So it was a whole unit.
Did it still use a microtape or were they like?
Some of them still use the microtape. Eventually they went on to having
Digital answering machines in the 90s.
Yeah. And they had you could only have like so many messages left
on
there.
6 second long message and you could put like maybe 5 of them on it.
And that's when you got the whole house together and like, okay, we're recording the message. Push the button. Hi. You've reached Bob. You're supposed to say your part, man. You're one of the kids. You're supposed to say your part so that they know who we're talking about. Let's try it again.
Wait, say that again?
When you're recording the message for the answering machine.
Right.
The family's recording the message.
Oh.
Right? So you push the button. It's like, hi, you've reached Bob. What are you supposed to say? Yeah. Oh, God.
I'm missing something here.
The whole family would have to get around, record all their names onto the message.
Oh, my goodness. So yeah, see, I never did that. My dad and my mom used to actually do, they used to do like singing phone greetings.
That's even worse. they were musicians.
Especially around Christmas.
Yeah, okay. They were musicians, so that at least helps.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you had that.
Yeah.
This would be a funny bit to be on the podcast. just James saying something and then dead airspace. But anyway, you'd have
like, what do you? I never did that part. I was always worried about that.
But yeah, that was a thing families did. They would push the record button to record the outgoing message. Everybody would say their names or something. And then when you called them, it would be the outgoing message of like five people's names in the family. So that you know you reached everybody in the family if you got that message. By having those answering machines,
right,
you didn't have to take every call.
Right.
You could not take a phone call, let the answering machine pick it up. And if it was somebody you wanted to talk to, you picked up the handset. If it was somebody you didn't want to talk to, you just let the machine take it.
Floating around the phone waiting for the answering machine to pick it up.
Yeah.
I remember doing that. My parents doing that all the time.
Yeah. Because they'd be like, they'd be standing right around it. Okay, who is it? Who is it? Who's calling me? And it's like, you know, your Uncle Ted. I don't want to talk to Uncle Ted. I'll call him later.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. It gave you a level of privacy. It gave you a level of kind of choosing who you wanted to interact with. And again, this becomes important. This becomes important to the psychology of what phones have become in our lives.
Right.
This is part of the start of that, where you can avoid phone calls. You can avoid the interaction with people.
Right.
If you choose to, because before you couldn't. We get to the next level. After the answering machines, after these other things come in, the cordless phones. Now, they may have come in at roughly the same time.
Right.
For the purpose of what I'm trying to illustrate here is how these changes happen.
Right.
You get the cordless phone, and I'm talking the cordless home phone that still has to rest on the handset and charge the battery. The original ones had that super long metal antenna you'd have to pull out.
The one that just, the pull-out antenna that's 2 feet long.
That you'd smack your brother or your sister with when mom wasn't looking. And then if it bent, you got super worried you were going to get your you-know-what busted. So, you get that. And that created another level of things where you can move around the house. You could take phone calls privately. And this became a major issue when we started getting into our preteen years.
Right.
Because by that time, most houses had been able to try to get these cordless phones had become accessible financially for most houses to get. And this gave us, in our preteen years, where we were trying to work out the whole dating scene. Because guess what? No computers to date with. No ways to connect with people over computers.
No computers to date with.
Yeah.
That
seriously.
That phrase sounds weird to me.
But
and we've been doing it for 20 years now.
But we didn't have that at that point in time. So we'd have to worry about the phone calls to the boyfriend or girlfriend's house. And, you know, you call the girlfriend's house, hope her dad doesn't answer, because her dad's going to be like, who's this? I want to talk to so-and-so. Oh, really? What's your name? Where do you live? It's like, oh,
where do you
I'm
live?
In trouble. But you have to worry about a little bit of that. Even when they got to know you, they'd still be giving you crap about, oh, you called to talk to my daughter? How you doing? You doing this? You doing that? You know, that kind of thing.
You get to go through the interrogation
like,
over the phone.
Yeah, like light core threatening you.
Totally.
But having the thing about it was these cordless phones, if you wanted to have a discussion with your girlfriend, you had to sit in your living room and she had to sit in her living room having these discussions while the parents are glaring at you the entire time. And if you had parents like mine, making fun of every little sweet thing you're trying to say to your girlfriend. And they did. Oh, my parents did. My dad got a kick out of it. So did my mom.
I bet they did.
But when you got that cordless phone, you had more privacy. You're able to go and have your phone call elsewhere.
Right.
This creates another societal thing. Instead of just the avoidance of having to talk to people when you don't want to, this creates a group of people who actually try to take their personal calls in a separate area away from most people. Now, Gen Xers, baby boomers, they get phone calls. They got the little thing in their ear. It's always baby boomers that got the thing in their ear.
Oh, the little earpiece thing?
Yes.
Oh, we've skipped to current to modern day.
Well, I'm just giving an analogy here. The baby boomers and the Gen Xers,
right,
they'll get their phone call.
Right.
And they'll just take it right in the middle of everything.
Right.
You get your millennials, they won't even take the phone call. They'll just text.
No, honestly, like, that's where I'm at now. I'm just like, dude, don't call me. I'm in the middle of doing stuff all the time. Text me. I'll respond in 5 minutes.
But when I do call you.
Or I'll read it and completely forget.
Yeah, that happens too much. When I do call you, though, do you sit right in the living room and take the phone call? Or do you walk around the house? Do you find a better place to take the phone call away from everything?
I walk all over the damn house.
Whenever I get a phone call,
I
go sit somewhere else. And I believe that has to do specifically with the cordless phones. This is how the evolution, and this is just the evolution of home phones, not even cell phones. This is how the evolution of home phones makes our experience as Xennials a different experience, because we saw this huge evolution to where we didn't have to, with the answering machines, we didn't have to have the contact when it was forced upon us. We could choose when to have it.
Okay.
And then with the cordless phones, we could choose where to have it. And this makes a difference. No, the other generations didn't get it the same way we did.
Hmm.
But hopefully that gave you a little idea of something that makes the Zenial culture a little different. You have something?
We've only got like halfway through like the cordless phone, man. We just hit the cordless phone
The cordless phone, I think, is enough. I think that really tells you how much difference.
After that, I mean, you've got so much more that happened past that.
No, not in home phone design. You went into the cell phones at that point.
True.
But and that's why I said centering just on home phone design.
Yeah.
That has made a difference in how the culture deals with phones. Mm-hmm. And the fact that all of that happened while we were still living at home as kids.
That's big, man.
There's a whole other conversation we could have about how cell phones changed it, but just home phones have made a difference in how we deal with, how we as Zennials deal with people. And then how the society in general deals with people and deals with conversation and communication. Yeah. But we had that happen from birth to adulthood, whereas Gen Xers happened after they were adults. Baby boomers happened after they had kids. Maybe even grandkids. The millennials, that stuff was already in place before they were even
things. For the most part, yeah.
Born, but understanding things.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have no idea what it was like to not have a house with a cordless phone in it. The cordless phone just extends into the cell phone later.
True.
It just makes it more mobile.
Yeah, totally. It just allows you that. Yeah.
But that's it. Just with the home phone itself and the changes in the home phone, mm-hmm. that shows that our experience is a little different than what the other generations are. Things happen in such a rapid fashion in our childhood.
Yeah, it's a lot of
that made the changes.
A lot of shifting, really shifting and having to adapt immediately.
And I think that's what makes the difference in the way we view things. So
crazy.
We'll take our break now. We'll be back in a few for the next half of the podcast. This is kind of how we're working things. We do one half on one subject, one half kind of on another, all packaged in one. All right. We'll see you in a bit.
Hey, friends, this is Mike from the Zenial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezenialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
We are back for the second part of the first ever podcast. Now, the second part, we're going to take a little lighter tone, not as much of a explanatory tone. I'm not giving you a lesson this time.
Okay.
But the thing to keep clear is, while the podcast is the Zenial Chronicles and we're talking about life as Zenials, part of it is our life and daily experience, not just the history of it and what made us think this way, view the world in this way, but the actual views of the world. Okay. Of things that are happening. Try to keep some things kind of topical about what's going on in the world.
Kind of like a current events thing? Is that what we're talking about? Or?
Yeah, if any of you remember current events back in your school, elementary school.
Current events.
Yes. Let's do current events. Well, this is a current event. Now, those of us who know us might think, at least know me, might think I might go political. Those of us who know Mike, I don't know what they think he might go with when it comes to...
My friends know that I tend to get political. I'm going to try to avoid that.
We're not doing too much of that because there's too much political going on in the world. We can talk about things. Everybody should kind of know our viewpoints, but they'll come out organically.
Some stress and stuff, man.
Yeah. So this is something that was in the news.
What was that?
And for somebody like me, this is a newsworthy item. And maybe even for somebody like you.
Okay.
Because I have body built by fast food. I'm not sure if your body is quite built by fast food.
Yeah, I can pretty much say that, for the most part. Yeah,
when you're going to fast food.
Not the best diet to have, but.
Not necessarily. But when you're going to fast food, what's kind of the most important item when it comes to any fast food place? What's the one thing that kind of ties them all together? It's like some have hamburgers, some have tacos, hot dogs, all these different sandwiches of various type. Fried chicken, for instance.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
I listed hot dogs separate from sandwich, so we'll discuss that another time.
Okay.
It might even be a taco. Another time, though. Anyway, the point here is, what's kind of a mainstay with all the different places that you go? What's kind of served at almost every fast food place that you go? It's not a main dish. It's a side dish.
Are we talking like fries?
There we go.
Okay.
On the first thing. You got
Boom!
Fries. Now here's the thing about this. Fries are important.
Right.
They can sometimes dictate where you go to eat.
How good the fries are, I would say so.
I love that you said exactly that, because we are talking about an LA Times article that just came out last week that ranks French fries.
Oh, boy.
From fast food places. We're going to go over the list, sir.
Okay.
We're going to discuss these things as to whether we've had them or not.
All right.
And more importantly, we're going to discuss your reactions. Now, I am going to ask you, for the sake of fun, and for the sake of reactions, because I got one on here that is going to be incendiary.
Oh, really?
Oh, going to be big boom. I think anyway. I may be totally wrong, and maybe a false boom. There may be people who listen to this later, especially residents of certain states who listen to this later, who may have issue with this listing, because guess what? There has been huge blow up on Twitter about it. This is why I wanted to talk about it.
Okay.
Because French fries are a very important thing to me. I love, now, I'll say it now. You'll hear it a lot. It'll become a running joke. Hamburgers, you know, sir, hamburgers are my favorite food.
Yes.
Hands down, period.
Yes.
But right up there,
burgers are fantastic.
Burgers are amazing. Right up there, though, French fries, the perfect accompaniment for a burger.
Right.
So French fries are important.
Yes.
There are times I would like to go to one place to get my hamburger and another place to get my French fries because the French fries are actually better. I don't do it because it's a pain in the butt, but
I was going to say, that just sounds like way too much
work. Like if I was super rich and I could have two people go to two different locations to get my stuff for me
right.
and bring it to me, they would go to one place to get my burger, one place to get my fries because that's the way it would work.
Okay.
When you're rich like that, you do stuff like that.
Okay.
I'm not rich like that.
Oh, right.
So here is the list. We are starting the list from the LA Times article.
Reaction to the list. Yes. Is that what's going on? Are we going from bottom to top? Are we ascending or descending?
I'm starting with number one and working all the way down to number 19.
Good Lord. This is a long, quick. Okay. Well, we better move fast. No,
some of these, I think your response will be, I've not been there. I've never had them.
Okay.
Or they're okay. You don't have to go in depth for every single one.
Okay.
I want you to go in depth for the ones that you really have an opinion and feeling about.
All right. I feel like this is almost a quiz. Let's go.
It's not so much quiz, but yeah, we'll go. Okay. Number one on this list from this LA Times article.
Okay.
And we will make sure to do some kind of a link on the Facebook page in the comments when this comes out,
to
the article itself, so other people can read through the article.
We'll probably put it in like the YouTube link too.
We can link
to the page off of our YouTube.
You know how to do that better than I do.
Yes, sir. I do.
That's why you're the tech guy. So number one is Five Guys.
I've never been there.
Neither have I, which is really difficult for me because like the list is number one.
Is this a national list?
This is, well, yes and no. I mean, LA Times did it.
Five Guys, a pizzeria?
No, there's a Five Guys actually here in like Roseville, Rockland area.
Okay, so it's a fast food joint.
Yes, not fast food. Never been there,
so I don't know. I thought it was like a pizzeria or something.
No, it's not a pizzeria, and it's not a fast food joint. It's more of a kind of somewhat sit-down burger joint, but not like...
we're talking like almost a Jasper's kind of?
I think Jasper's
is much less to go.
I think it would follow in that rough kind of understanding, yeah.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Five Guys is close to where we are, at least relatively close, so one day we will go there, and we will try the fries, and we will report back to the podcast how the fries are.
Because
when I saw that, I was like, Five Guys are putting that as the best? I need to try those fries.
Yeah, it makes me real curious about them.
Fat Boy wants them. Fat Boy wants them much. So, number one is Five Guys. Number two, McDonald's. Now, with a caveat, there's a caveat in the article that says, for the first minute or two that you have them, they are the best food ever. But after they start getting cold, not as much.
No, yeah. Dude, if you have... This is why everybody I know starts snacking on the fries in the car on the way home, bringing the food back.
Yes.
Because they're great when they're hot. But if you waited like 10 minutes to get back home...
It's terrible. They're a soggy
mess.
Yeah,
they're just not okay.
Yeah, no amount of ketchup or sweet and sour sauce will save those fries at that point.
Sweet and sour... I am not sure I would dig on sweet and sour sauce.
You're a barbecue sauce guy, aren't you?
I'm a plain old ketchup on fries guy.
Okay. When you get your chicken nuggets, what do you get?
Barbecue sauce.
Okay.
Yep.
Lame. That's what everybody gets.
It's good, man.
So is the sweet and sour sauce, man.
Don't you sit there and Gen X make fun of me for something that happens to be popular, you jackass.
I will, pseudo-millennial.
Pseudo-millennial.
There we go.
Ouch.
So, number...
Cynical bastard.
Number three. Number three, Del Taco. Now,
really?
Now, have you had the Del Taco fries?
No.
First of all, what's nice about Del Taco fries?
I like almost avoid Del Taco by the like a plague because it's just everything that comes. Like, sorry, no, you got a place that's named for its tacos. You go get tacos, and I just don't like them. They're super bland.
The tacos aren't necessarily the star of the show in this. There's a few other items out there that are.
I know we're talking about fries here, but that's a surprise.
No, I because the thing is, of these on this list, they are unusual. They are a crinkle cut fry.
Oh.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Wait a minute. Yes. I have had Del Taco fries.
And?
They are pretty damn good.
Yes, they're a crinkle cut, so they give you a little bit more of the potato in it. It's not just as thin as the
shoestring style. They're decent. I think they're a little soggy, depending on when you get them.
They can be, and I've had them served to me every time I've gone there. I've had them served in actually a drink cup, which adds to the soggy because it holds in all the moisture from
them. Okay, yeah.
But still, when somebody hands you a large drink cup full of French fries, that's just kind of cool.
Okay, all right.
I just kind of like that.
Okay, so, what's next?
I think it's Steak and Shake.
Never had them.
Never had them either. I've never
are they like steak fries? Steak is that what they are?
I do not know the quality of the fries or the size, cut, anything like that. I just know that Steak and Shake is next on the list. Never been there.
Okay, this sounds like maybe it's some kind of East Coast thing or something.
Not necessarily. No, no, no. I'm not. I'm telling you right now, this is not some kind of East Coast thing.
This is all on the
this
West
Coast? This is LA Times. This is LA Times, dude. LA Times.
Yeah, but is it a national list?
Not necessarily. I think it's more of a list of...
It's a Cali list?
I think so.
This is strange. Okay, please continue. Keep going.
I
and this is ranking down from the top,
yes,
right? Like
yes,
Mickey D's was number two. I could kind of understand that, but yeah. Okay, so keep going. Keep
number
going.
Five, Arby's.
Arby's fries are pretty damn good.
I can say I've never had the fries at Arby's. I've just had the sandwiches.
They're pretty good. And the sandwiches, I dig on the sandwiches. I know a lot of people like Arby's has a really crappy name. I think it just depends on which one you go to.
And what you order.
There's not like much of a quality control between those, but I mean,
yeah.
Dude, that sauce though, that sauce on the roast beef sandwiches is killer. So is the horsey sauce, man.
So good.
Killer stuff. But anyways, fries, yeah, their fries are pretty decent.
Okay. Next.
Okay.
Number six on the list, Carl's Jr.
Those are
specifically
the Criss Cuts?
the waffle fries.
Yeah. Those Criss Cuts are bomb.
Those are very good fries.
Yeah.
Those are very good. And I get it. Waffle fries give you a little bit different flavor to them. They're really good actually when you put cheese on them, but even by themselves, very, very good fries.
Cheese on the Criss Cuts. I would have to try that because I normally have I have the Criss Cuts the same way everybody else has them with ranch.
It helps when you're leaving a music show and you're half drunk and trying to put something greasy in your belly just so you can get home okay.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Number seven. Okay. Dairy Queen.
Dirt Queen.
Yeah, and again, into one that I've not really eaten a lot of the food at. I've had like their chicken strips, a burger there before, but I'm more there for...
I haven't had Dairy Queen in like 10 years, I think.
Yeah, I'm more there for like a Blizzard or something like that. I'm really not eating the food, but that's okay. It's worth going to. Number eight. This one I think is ranked, personally, I think is ranked too high, and I'll explain why.
Which one is it?
Number eight is Wendy's. Now, I love a Wendy's burger. They do a brioche bun, which adds
Wendy's burgers
extra
are good.
I
don't know. I just consider the fries. They seem like similar to McDonald's quality
to
me.
The thing with the fries with Wendy's, I don't know how many years ago it was, but they came out with a new fry that's got the skin still on them. They got the sea salt.
Those are decent. I like them.
I don't like those as much as the previous fries they used to have. The fries they used to have were a little thicker than McDonald's, but the same as McDonald's, but thicker, and still tasted good after they got cold. I used to love those fries. They're somewhere between the shoestring of McDonald's and a steak fry size.
Kind
of,
yeah.
They were so, in fact, they were about the same size as what Burger King's current fries are.
I tend to like the Wendy's
so
like
crispy.
Potato skin on the end fries, kind of, you know,
just,
I dig on them.
They just don't have the same...
Question, though. Yes. I am already starting to be disappointed that I am not hearing some certain things on this list.
Yes, just let it go.
Okay.
Let it go.
What, you think they're going to be on the list?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they're going to be on the list.
Okay, is this like every fast food restaurant in California? Is that where we're looking
at? A good number of them, yes.
I was going to say, if something doesn't make the list, I'm going to be pissed.
I think you're going to be pissed anyway, sir.
Okay.
Okay, number nine, Shake Shack.
Never been there.
Never been there either. Kind of want to go because I love myself some milkshakes.
Cool.
Milkshakes are beautiful. Burger King. This is what I was just alluding to. This is
Why
Burger
is it
King
so
number 10.
Far down?
Burger King number 10? See, I was alluding to the fact Wendy's fries were about the same cut as Burger King's current fries are, but Burger King's current fries are just kind of bland. They're not terrible.
So.
They're just kind of
No, no. Okay, hold on. No, I gotta disagree with you on this one because the Burger King fries, they've got better seasoning on them. I personally thought that the Burger King fries beat the McD's fries,
more
to be completely
salt?
Honest. Huh?
It's just salt, bro.
What they're putting in the fries before they actually fry them is different. It's not just straight salt.
No,
not
I
like
know.
The McD's
I get
stuff.
What you're saying.
But there's also like a different texture to the fries that I like a lot more than
crunchy,
like the McD's or
yeah,
you know,
they have crunchy
other
outside,
things that
more
maybe on the
inside.
List that I really don't dig on that much. Like,
okay.
And stuff that hasn't been mentioned that I don't dig on. So, but dude, the BK fries deserve to be higher on the list.
Okay, you believe BK higher?
Yeah.
All right. Next one, number 11, Chick-fil-A. Now, I have to abstain from this because I never have eaten a Chick-fil-A and for personal reasons will never eat at Chick-fil-A.
I have eaten a Chick-fil-A and I can understand people that refuse to eat there.
This is another waffle fry situation, right?
Yes, they are. Okay, so they're like, imagine like the Criss Cut fries from Carl's Jr. without the extra seasoning on them.
Yeah, it just seems bland to me.
Kind of, yeah. Okay. I mean, they cook well.
Yeah.
They're decent. They've got the potato skin thing like the Wendy's deal.
Yeah.
Except they're waffle fries. I don't know. They're like the same type of fries as it. Look, you want that experience? Go to a supermarket and pick up waffle fries in the frozen food section. They're pretty much the same thing.
Got it. So nothing special in that.
Yeah.
Regard.
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing nuts. They're all right.
Okay.
I mean, whatever.
I get you. So number 12.
Right.
KFC. This is the interesting one, because KFC's fries...
Wow, they rank that far down?
Well, they're a potato wedge. They're not actually a fry.
Yeah, those things are great.
They really are, but I think the reason you ranked it so far down is because it is a potato wedge. It's not a fry. It's a different beast, really.
So are we... Okay, so wait a minute here. If that's the case, does that mean that everything from here is no longer considered a fry?
No, I disagree with you.
Okay.
Apparently he says the potato wedge from KFC is good enough to hit number 12 on a list of 1 through 19.
Even
though it's not technically a fry, it's good enough to do. Okay. And I like them personally.
Dude, I love them. I think they're great. Those potato wedges I could have with nothing.
Yeah, I love potato wedges in general.
Yeah.
Potato wedges are good.
All right. Continue.
Number 13, Jack in the Box. And this is in reference specifically to their curly fries.
Which I think are the ones that are ranking farther down?
I think that that's low for them personally.
So these are like specialty fries, because their regular fries are not
Their regular fries are gross, but no, who honestly gets the regular fries?
Everybody
gets the curly fries.
You know what? And here's the problem with the curly fries. I can kind of agree with this, because the problem with the curly fries is they're so damned inconsistent.
Yeah.
That's the main issue.
You get some that have that super curl to them.
Right.
You have some that are the spring. The boingy spring.
Yeah, sometimes they're like the good long ones, and then the really long ones, though, they're like soggy.
And you get the expanded out ones that look like if you take the key ring on a keychain and like rip it apart, that's what those things look like. It's like an old phone cord. Yeah,
there's our transition.
There you go. You get kind of they get kind of like you say soggy. Especially I love the spring ones. Like sometimes you bite into the spring ones and it's all crunchy, and sometimes you bite into it and it's a soggy mess in the middle. It's like, oh,
you know what? The ones that I don't like about the curly fries at Jack in the Box are the little tiny C-shaped ones, because there's a bunch of those curly fry crumbs that make it into your flipping
and like
stupid
they're so
fries.
Hard to pick up, and it's better just to find some way to scoop them up and.
Yeah, they don't even like, some people like putting fries on their burger, which is actually kind of a cool technique. I can understand that. You open the burger, throw fries on it. That's fun, right? Sir?
You're getting into the burger conversation. We're going to have a whole hour about burgers, I guarantee you.
So that being said, I mean, my point is that you can't even work with those too well in that situation. No. They just keep falling out, man.
I mean, they're tasty. Do they deserve to be 13 on the list? I think they should be higher. But again, there's a few on this list.
I mean, they're
that
tasty,
I've not
but
had.
Man, yeah, there's so much trouble to them.
Okay, number 14, Popeyes. Okay.
I have not had Popeyes in years.
I've had it in the
I don't remember what their fries taste like.
I've had it within the last year or two, and I barely remember what their fries taste like. They were just kind of blah.
Probably why they're so down on the list.
Exactly.
Okay.
Number 15. Okay. I kind of agree with this, and I love eating at this place.
Okay.
Wiener Schnitzel.
Yeah, their fries are kind of
a soggy mess.
Here's the deal. Like the fries, you don't get, when you get the fries over at Wiener Schnitzel, you get the chili cheese fries.
Yes.
You don't get the regular fries because the fries suck. You get them for the chili and the cheese that goes on top of them.
And sorry, if you go to Wiener Schnitzel,
and you got to eat that stuff with a fork.
You do.
It won't stay on the fry.
You do.
The fries are just like wet noodles.
Yeah, you do. You really do. And I'm sorry, but really, just go to Wiener Schnitzel and order chili dogs, because really, that's why you should be there.
Yes,
chili dogs are why you should be at Wiener Schnitzel. Okay, number 16, a place called Jollibee.
Who?
My response exactly. I have never heard of this place. Never heard of Jollibee.
Well, it sounds like it's so far down on the list, I don't want to go.
Yeah, not interested.
Okay.
Number 17, Rally's.
Rally's?
Yes.
Boy, I haven't been to a Rally's in a while.
I have never been. I actually buy their frozen fries, their brand of frozen fries, frozen fries for my kids.
What do you think about them?
I've eaten them. They're pretty good, actually.
But you're like oven bacon and stuff,
no,
right?
No, I'm...
You're just nuking them?
Hell no!
What are you doing?
What the hell, man? I'm a fat man. I have a deep fryer in my home.
Oh, you see?
And I use the deep fryer daily, sir. Daily.
Good?
Are you proud? If I'm making fried food, it's going down right.
Okay,
it's going
good.
Down right.
Cool.
I make my own homemade french fries.
Yeah,
it's good.
Eat your own, man. I mean, I got like an air fryer, but I don't have like a deep fryer.
Air fryer.
And I don't want all that oil.
Again, your millennial is showing. cover that up. I've actually had the Rally's fries both in the oven when I'm trying to be more healthy,
okay,
and then in the deep fryer. They taste good equally both ways. They're a pretty decent fry compared to, say, because they're a seasoned fry.
Right.
Compared to, say, a regular Sword Brand frozen season fry,
okay,
I would say they're above. Now, does that give me an ability to comment on what it's like in the store? No, obviously not.
Right.
You know, in the actual restaurant itself.
I was going to say, yeah.
I don't know what it's like in the restaurant itself.
Because, dude, I'm telling you, like, Red Robin, I'm not sure that they're on the list.
They're not.
Wow. Well is, they're not a fast food joint,
they're
not. Though.
They're a sit-down food, and they
I was going to say, because Red Robin's fries, like, when you get them there at the restaurant, are killer.
Yeah.
But when you have them, like, from frozen, they taste terrible.
And I've put the...
They're just super inconsistent. They don't work.
And I've been at Red Robin and almost put them on the challenge for their bottomless fries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wasn't sure how many more plates of them they were going to give me because I ate a lot.
Yeah. Hey, they're good fries, dude.
I will. Okay. So that's number 17. We're at 17 now with Rally's. Number 18, Sonic. Now, here's my problem with 18 Sonic. If you're going to Sonic, you don't need a Sonic very much. I can tell by the look on your face.
No, there's a Sonic. I had the opportunity to go to a Sonic out in Texas. And one of the things of the food out in Texas, especially the beef quality in Texas, is high. So I feel like I got a biased experience.
You did. So that's the only time you've been to a Sonic is out in Texas.
Not necessarily. There is a Sonic out here in California, out in Roseville.
There's one in Yuba City as well.
Okay, so there's a Sonic. I've gone to the Sonic in Roseville. Absolutely not the same.
Okay, yeah.
So I can't necessarily speak for, and I don't know if these franchises their own thing,
do they
make them there, or
you
what?
You are completely correct in the sense, Sarah, my wife,
mm-hmm.
has been out to, before the Sonic came up here, before the Sonic came into California,
right.
She had been talking it up because she had had it when she was living in either Oklahoma or Arkansas. I'm not positive which location she had it in, but it was one of the two locations because she had lived for a short time in both Oklahoma and Arkansas.
Right.
When she had it there, she was super excited for it to come here. So we were there on opening day in Yuba City when it came to California.
You're like, no.
No. She was so disappointed eating the food at the one in Yuba City because it was nothing
dude,
like.
That's what I got out of the one in Roseville, too. I just wasn't digging on it, dude. It's not the same experience at all.
And more importantly,
it's like it makes me afraid to see a White Castle out here. You know what I mean? I've been to a White Castle on the East Coast, and holy smokes, those are good.
I can see that. I would say the same would be with me if they ever came out with Whataburger here. Because Whataburger is...
I thought I've seen a Whataburger.
No, there is no Whataburger in California.
You're like, believe me, I'd be there.
I guarantee you, I would be there. Even even if I was worried the food would taste different, I would still go just to hope
that
it would be right.
All right,
Hold on. With the Sonic thing. Here's my problem with the Sonic thing.
What's the problem?
If you're a regular person that goes to Sonic, and I do go to Sonic regularly, I love their slushes.
Okay.
I get slushes all the time.
Okie dokie.
If you're buying food,
okay. You
don't get the fries.
Okay.
You get the tater tots.
Okay.
Because they got tater tots.
I forgot they got tater tots.
They tater
Dude,
tots.
Their tater tots are killer.
Their tater tots are good. The fries, not so much. Why would you get the fries if you're not getting to get tater tots? I wouldn't even put them on this list. Like,
dude, when there's an option, if I go to any fast food place and there's an option for tater tots instead of fries, dude, I always go for the tater tots.
Tater tots are good.
In all true honesty, just full disclosure here, over at BK, I get the little mini onion rings too instead of the fries.
I get that.
If I have the option. But, you know, it depends. Sometimes I feel like the fries, and when I have the fries, they're really good.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Okay, so we've come to the end of our list.
What's the end of our list, man? What's the one at the bottom?
Number 19.
No, the dead bottom. What is it?
Do you want to guess? Take a guess. Please take a guess.
Give me a moment. What hasn't been mentioned?
What hasn't been?
Jack in the Box has been mentioned.
Remember, it's LA Times.
Carl's Jr. has been mentioned.
It's in California.
We're talking, it's out in California. I have an idea of what it is.
Please. Get it right.
You want me to get it right?
Please, I hope you do. It'll be amazing.
Because I think I might agree.
Well, go ahead.
Honestly, I think it's In-N-Out.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God.
It is In-N-Out.
Here's the problem that I have with In-N-Out.
I'll let you do yours first.
Okay.
And then I can do mine.
Okay. All right. So here's what's up. I agree with that being on the bottom of this list.
Yes.
The reason why I agree with it is because even though the fries are made fresh, the potatoes are cut right there, it has all of the formula for the practically perfect fry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that stuff is there. You get that stuff in the little paper bowl cart thing that they give you.
Yeah.
Every one of them is paper thin and just raggedy. Like, I don't know how you can cut a fry from a fresh potato and get a soggy ass mess like
that. Yeah, see, that's my problem. They're
caving in on themselves in the middle.
See,
how do you do that?
Here's the thing. The one time in my entire life I have been to In-N-Out was with you.
Right.
You, my wife, and our friend Scott went to In-N-Out Burger before we went to a Metallica concert.
Yes. And I love In-N-Out. No, I don't. It's not about the fries, but I love In-N-Out. Don't get me wrong.
And my wife and I both came away exceptionally disappointed, especially considering I saw them do the fresh cut fries.
Mm-hmm.
I make my own French fries at home.
Right.
The way to make French fries properly, mm-hmm. from fresh cutting them out of a potato, mm-hmm. you have to double fry them. You fry them once at a low temperature, like a 305 to 315.
But you can't do that at a fast food joint.
And then you fry them a second time at 375. You need to double fry them to get the proper crisp on the outside and the floofy inside. Floofy inside, crispy outside.
Floofy inside.
That's like a better than fluffy. It's like fluffy with more air pockets in it. It is fluffy.
It's fluffy.
It's a fluffy inside and a crunchy outside. That's how you have
it's
to
like
do
that. It's like an extra U in that fluffy.
Yes, fluffy. Sir. Put the extra U in it or put a couple of O's in there. I don't care.
I'm down with fluffy over fluffy. That makes sense.
It's a beautiful thing because you get that crunch and then the airiness inside of it.
Okay.
And I'm like you. How do they screw up from a perfect potato to make this? Either
you're
getting bad potatoes.
Yeah, that's why I'm confused. It's like it's even worse because you see what they're doing.
And so you have nasty fries at the place. And then, in my opinion, you got a burger that's subpar as well. But we'll get into that more when we talk about
burgers. Okay, I can't agree with you on that because their burgers are bomb.
You can't agree with me. Half the people listening to this won't agree with me. In fact, I have only found two people ever who agree with me.
I don't know. There's a lot of, I see a lot of that counterculture memeology now.
No, now hold on. Are you saying that I'm doing it because everybody else loves it?
No, sir. Absolutely not.
Burger. I ate the burger, and burgers are life. I ate the burger, and I was not happy with the burger. And I guarantee you, here's the thing, man. If I had to fly to Texas for any reason whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
I had to fly out, go to Texas for whatever. The thing I did make sure of, the one time I went out to Texas, I told them flat out, I'm cool going here, but I need to hit a Whataburger. I would hit a Whataburger again. I would go hit a White Castle somewhere just to be able to, because I've never had a real White Castle. I've had the frozen ones, but I've never had the real ones.
Them frozen ones do not work.
I know they don't. I want the real ones.
Yeah, get the real ones.
Burger is life. If In-N-Out was that good, I guarantee you I would go back regardless of anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like it enough to go back. But we will go more in-depth on that with the burger conversation, but I knew In-N-Out being the last one. The second I saw this list, I was like, In-N-Out is the last one to eat. And I wasn't sure what your reaction was going to be, whether you're going to be like, yeah, I agree, those fries aren't good.
Dude, like,
you were like, no, how could they put it that low?
I don't know, man. It was really, really funky. Like, I've just never really... Okay, so there is a caveat to the In-N-Out fries that...
Don't.
What, animal?
It even mentions that in the article, sir.
Then the article is wrong because the animal fries are great. But it's the same thing as the Wiener Schnitzel chili cheese fries.
Yes, exactly. I can see that.
You top them with something else. That's a different story.
And it's not a fry anymore. It's something else.
It's another kind of plate. I can agree with that. It's a different type of experience. So but if you add stuff on top, I got a question for you. Then if that's the case, if chili cheese fries, what about like cheesy bacon fries? Do they count?
I'd still put that in a different category. That's not really fries. It's become a dish at that point as opposed to a side.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to know what these standards were. And these guys were talking like the animal fries too, because dude, animal style burgers are better than the regular burgers that they have.
Okay. I get that. But you can't call it a burger because it's still a burger. But here's the thing. I'll give a little taste in the burger conversation so that when we have the burger conversation, people want to listen to the burger conversation.
Okay.
Here's a little taste of the
burger
conversation.
We're teasing the burger conversation.
Yes, because the burger conversation will be big. It is a passion of mine. If you cannot eat the hamburger with just the two buns and the patty, no sauces, no dips, no condiments, no nothing. If the burger does not taste good with just the buns and the patty, then it is not technically a good hamburger. When you need to add other things to it to make it taste, I am not finished, sir. When you need to add other things to make it taste, anybody who loves a hamburger, sir.
I guess.
Yes, sir. Now, I'm not saying that those things don't make it taste better.
Right.
But if you won't eat that specific burger without anything on it because it needs the other things to taste good, then it's not really a good burger. It's a good vehicle for the other flavors.
Well, by that standard, all fast food burgers fail.
Oh, I disagree with you, sir.
Who?
I would eat a Wendy's burger with nothing on it. In a second.
Oh, you're
in a heartbeat.
Man, you make a point. All right. Let's stop it here.
Yeah, stop it here. We'll do the burger conversation later because I guarantee that's going to be something. All right. I think this is us for the day. You want to take us out, Mike?
Yeah. One moment.
I've got nothing in front of me, man. True, I didn't get it ready. I will take us out. Thank you for listening for the first podcast. Obviously, we have some things we need to work through. James needs to do his job better. Mike needs to be better prepared because James does his job right.
I just can't recite from a script without it sitting in front of me, man. I got to have it in front of me.
Memorization, brother. Memorization.
Ha.
So thank you for listening. Hope you found it funny. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at Zenkron. This will be available, I think, at first on YouTube, but also hopefully very shortly on iTunes, Google, whatever we find a place to put this on, make it available, we will put it on the Facebook page and we will put it on Twitter so that you can access it in any way possible. Please leave comments. Let us know what you think. Questions are always welcome. And thank you for listening, guys.
Thanks a lot, guys.
I'm James.
I'm Mike.
And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.